This is an Enterprise Times podcast with Kamal Ahluwalia, Chief Revenue Officer of Aptus. Kamal, how's Aptus done in the last year?
So it's been an interesting year for us. We shifted our focus from simply delivering applications to our customers to driving outcomes. What we realized was that we were increasingly being brought in by the customer as part of their transformation initiative. Invariably, these broad initiatives with our customers, and some of them are some fairly large iconic organizations, there is a business outcome that is needed. Typically, it's the CEO or a C-suite initiative that's driving the transformation project and the investment. So we had to actually work backwards to see what are we trying to solve, what will it require, what is the process reengineering, what is the change in mindset or go-to-market strategy for the customer, and what is the technology piece. So instead of just solving the technology piece, we had to educate both our sales team and the delivery team and the engagement team and start working with the customers to say, okay, let's work from the business outcome backwards. And of course, we are very good at automation and all that stuff. That focus on outcomes was transformational for us internally because we started to learn all the things that are non-technology related that are very, very material to delivering success to the customer. So I'll give you a couple of examples. In a lot of cases, our value prop, if you bring in our quote-to-cash solution, whether it's for top-line growth or sales efficiency or automation or increasing the deal size, win rate, all that stuff is, you have to have every salesperson using the tool. It can't be the CRM type stuff that they'll use it when they feel like it, otherwise they won't. We have to make sure that the adoption is very high. So when you're going live, well before the go live, you have to have an adoption strategy and training and all the right incentives in place so that when you turn on the new solution, you're actually going to drive the behavior. So that changed everything, that how we actually were understanding the outcomes and the customer's business, how we were matching everything from change management, behavior organization, and everything else that needed to the right solution. I also started to put in incentives in place for our sales team. One step was for ride along. Go with the end user and spend a day with them to see exactly the role that we can play in helping them during the day. If they are out there in the field, go with them. Make some sales calls with them. And that transformed their understanding of what the actual challenges are for them that we are supposed to solve. Second thing was to get a badge with our customers so they have reached that trusted advisor state where they are allowed to roam around the halls on their own because they are the trusted party. Then you learn so much more versus just looking at written down business requirements. Then you understand the spirit of the challenge, what is needed in the company.
That almost sounds like you're becoming a consultancy, in a sense almost becoming your own SI to deliver that change management piece. In a sense, I suppose, one is that's quite a change from most software companies, and how are you finding the right people to deliver that? And I've got a follow-up question.
You're absolutely right. It is called consultative selling. It's not just, I have a piece of software at for X dollars. This is understanding what are you trying to solve. Now, that said, we have also invested heavily in our partners over the last year. And we actually launched a partner-first initiative so that large organizations, and you saw them at the event, Accenture, Deloitte, PwC, Duff & Phelps, who are focused on contract management, and a number of others, Amind, etc. These are e-commerce specialists. We invested heavily so that these are the companies that are really in excellent position to have ongoing relationship and engagement. And in all of cases, they are already the trusted partner for our customer. To enable them and then have a team on our side that supports them in every engagement. So nobody is lacking in the expertise, but now we can actually scale as an organization because clearly we cannot hire an army to support some of the companies that we are now working with. I mean, we now have 100 of the Fortune 500 companies as well as a bunch of these fast-growing mid-sized companies.
I was here for the channel partner keynote session 2 days ago. Yep. I get the idea of quality over quantity. I think that's a very sensible move from where you're going. But one of the things that was missing was how do you validate new partners coming in? Because in the past, there's a criticism you brought on too many partners who haven't had that quality. and there was nothing in the keynote, or that audience probably didn't need to hear it, but what are you doing to validate new partners coming on board?
It's across a couple of angles. I'll give an example. Hitachi Consulting, they started to engage with us a couple of quarters ago because they are a big Microsoft partner. And as we started to engage with Microsoft ecosystem, Microsoft referred them to actually start working with Aptus, and now they're engaged with us. From our side, what we were looking for from Hitachi Consulting was, where is their expertise? Turns out they are very interested in working with us in financial services. So there's common interest between Microsoft, Aptus, and Hitachi in financial services. And then the due diligence was, they do have the depth. They do have a large install base of existing customers who already engage Hitachi. The team there is solid, understands financial services. And then it became simply a matter of, are we aligned in the go-to-market, meaning who are we comfortable selling to? Do we have the expertise? Is the CIO, the CFO, head of sales? So it's that level of engagement that we're looking for. Because just like you're saying, it's the consultative sell, so they need to have the same DNA as we do. And in this case, it was a very good match. Second element there is, we are looking for companies that can scale, either who are already at scale, the Accentures and Deloitte, or companies who have the wherewithal to scale. And we do offer customers multiple options. Amongst our partners, and now that ecosystem is fairly substantial, either we pick someone that's best suited for those customer needs, or customer has a preference, then we ensure that they have the right skill set and training. Or we actually work with them where we can be the front end and the partners can work with us because they have certain specialized training. They cannot take on the full project, but they can definitely have a very clear role and value add for the customer. And the third option is, of course, we can do it all ourselves. So we have a good spectrum now of options for our customers, and then a team that supports every engagement, whether it's done by us, by a partner, and in some cases, customers are now starting to actually own the outcome themselves. So from a qualification perspective, it is really, what is the mutual thing? It has to be more than a transaction. And if it's of interest to them, absolutely, all the way. But keep in mind, things changed in the last 2-3 quarters because all these analyst reports starting to come out, and in every single one of them, we were ranked as a leader. So they're also seeing, and all the write-ups are that all the new investment in these solutions in code-to-cash space are happening in cloud-based solutions. So while SAP and Oracle are in some of these, they are bringing the legacy solution, not the modern solution. So the partners are also seeing tremendous opportunity to scale with us as we're on the right place at the right time.
In terms of geographies, you've obviously expanded into Europe over the last few years, and you're going into Asia, and I think you've got quite a lot of traction in Japan as well. What about other regions in terms of outside of those? What are you looking to do there? So things like Australia, Brazil is obviously quite a hot spot at the moment as well.
We have users now in 106 countries. Fortunately, a lot of the customers are global customers, so the span is pretty broad. So we had to keep up with where the customers were taking us. Australia actually has been an absolute success for us. We have an excellent team there. We have a gentleman, Ian White, who's a general manager there, comes from running all of Oracle for APAC to actually having joined us 2 years ago. Got a number of customers there, their largest telecom company, their largest postal service company, Aussie Post, Telstra, New Zealand, Spark Digital. So got a lot of customers there and some others that have come on board recently. So Asia is absolutely doing very well for us. In Latin America, particularly Brazil, we have a couple of partners that we're working with. Particularly, it's Avanso, that's more of a boutique firm. And then Accenture is doing a lot of work with us. And Deloitte has also won a lot of business there with us. In Latin America, it will be partner-led strategy. And in Europe, we definitely now have our own sales team in all the regions. But there also, we are starting to work extensively with partners like Accenture and Hitachi and some of the on both sides. And Accenture has actually built a couple of vertical solutions. They have this full inquiry-to-order for manufacturing that they are now taking to market themselves. So very good alignment with there. So I think we're starting to scale effectively as well. And to support a lot of these large customers, some of them have a preference for Indian-based GSIs for some of the scale and ongoing operation stuff like that. And we have several of those who work closely with us, the Wipros, TCS, Tech Mahindra, and a couple of others. And we do see a lot of opportunity now, actually, not just in US and EMEA, but the rest of the world.
And in terms of verticals, you announced at the partner keynote that you're intending to kind of take into manufacturing and life sciences in a big way. I think there's an announcement yesterday around manufacturing as well. How's that going to work, and what do you tend to push into as much as possible?
In case of manufacturing, we're actually finding ourselves riding a couple of key trends that they're looking for. A lot of the large manufacturers sell through multiple channel partners, sometimes multiple layers of channel partners. And a lot of them don't have a direct relationship with the customer. And in some cases, they also want to transform their business models to just selling boxes, to selling solutions, and selling subscriptions. In some cases, they want to essentially package everything into one contract, products, services, maintenance, so that it's a one-stop shop and the customer is writing one check and the vendor is promising them outcomes. So now there's a higher order driver of pulling everything together. What we have done is built this complete solution that's called Inquire to Order. It's for all channels. So not only enabling your sales team to sell all the products and the pricing complexity they have, but also letting your partners self-serve and letting your customers self-serve. That is starting to resonate extremely well. Then we have customers like KUKA that have built a marketplace with us, and they are one of the premier robotics companies in the world. So they are actually enabling the customers to come and self-serve, reprogram the robot, download the firmware that actually reprograms the robot directly, and now you've changed the performance characteristics and what you want the robot to do on the field. And KUKA is also able to monitor the performance. So KUKA can also be proactive in saying, okay, I'm seeing the opportunity to actually fine-tune this, improve this, change this. It becomes a very tightly knit circle with the customer directly and the devices that are out there in various geographies. And we've also invested in the underlying infrastructure. So one is just the customer engagement, but the second part is the cost to serve for these manufacturers. For these global guys, they may have factories in different parts of the world, so your cost of manufacturing is very different. Then include the transfer cost. So if I'm selling a piece of equipment in Brazil, where I source it, how I get it there, and what will it take to deliver it to a large customer in Brazil is very different depending on all those characteristics. We can give them visibility into all of that. So we're really giving them the visibility that was never there because it was a very manual, fragmented process. So that's there. And then with communications, telecom, it's actually everything from running all of their contracts to selling through partners, because they are one of the main ones that had everything as a service. And there's a lot of complexity in pricing, so we have that. We're also taking our solutions into with the GSA schedule and on the FedRAMP to cater to the state, local, federal governments. And then our media business has been doing extremely well. And some of the largest brands in that space are now our customers. And there again, it's contracts and pricing, both for talent management, the contracts ongoing, the distribution contracts, wide variety of use cases where there are elements of our solution that are relevant there.
When you say media, can you expand on what you mean by media? Because that's such a diverse vertical.
Both the publishing companies that essentially have digital content or legacy content. So you heard Walter Kluwer's, which essentially delivers content to lawyers and the legal operations. So it's both that. It's also companies like Fitch Ratings that have ratings. So a lot of the services for both the broadcasting business, advertising business, and digital content. And all of these characteristics have a lot of changes in pricing and things that actually matter.
Last year when you received the funding, there was a lot of talk about going IPO, and I think Kirk mentioned going IPO in the first half of this year. What's the current status of looking to IPO?
So here's what I can share. We've put ourselves in a position where clearly access to capital markets is right there. And business-wise, both in terms of growth, where we are one of the top 10 SaaS companies now, public or private. And we also find ourselves in a very select company where we have a born-in-the-cloud business. It's running at scale. It's solving a very significant problem with a very large TAM. All the right things are in place. Now it's simply a matter of getting the timing down right, and when we are actually ready to go forward and take that next step. The good part is the business has been strong and we're in the right place at the right time solving the right problems. So now it's simply continuing to scale that effectively.
coming back to that scale problem, that scaling or hyperscaling is a major issue for a lot of companies. And some of those challenges around bringing on board talent, and you've got quite an impressive way of onboarding people. I'm just questioning whether that scales appropriately and how are you meeting that challenge of scale, especially when you're talking about international operations. To retain the culture, you built up an impressive culture in the US. How do you ensure that that's retained when you go out to these new regions where you've got cultural differences as well to battle against?
Excellent question. That was actually the toughest thing that we had to do and redo 2 years ago. So here's essentially what we have in place now that seems to be working extremely well. We do have an onboarding process that sets the initial foundation. And then we are using tools like SalesHood, which was developed by an ex-Salesforce employee. He was there for 12 years, Eli Cohen. Everything that he did manually and learned and relearned, he's now packaged into his solution set. What this does is it allows me to determine the areas for each of our salespeople on the initiatives that we think are important. How do we actually distill that with videos? So one, we convey the message, and then they understand it, and then they need to record their own understanding of it. And there is a peer review. So now you don't have an enablement team, you have a community that is learning and evaluating each other and giving feedback. And then the competitiveness takes over, because as these ratings and stars appear, then you know that you need to actually redo it if there are certain gaps, and the people are starting to help each other get better. We of course put SPIFs in place and the leaderboard concept. So there's a lot of gamification that's part of our learning system. Then the second element is how we have a 30, 60, 90-day plan on giving them the knowledge in bites and chunks that's consumable. Then our managers are able to run what we call sales huddles. So every month there'll be something, let's say, about competitive differentiation or about the pricing strategy or how to effectively do the upsell, cross-sell. So there are a lot of these sales plays that we have in our playbook that a regional VP can now run with his team, either in person or over basically even a phone. That level of collaboration was never there. Then the third element that we did, because we have been focused and investing a lot in partner success, is now making all of this content available to our partners also. So they become an extension of our team. We're all talking the same language. We're all talking about the same sales plays. So that is actually creating a lot of consistency in how we are engaging with our customers. Fourth element there is we've done a lot of stuff on the customer feedback, the voice of the customer, the win-loss reports, all of that. And we take all that data very seriously because that's the most valuable feedback that is brought in, whether it was the sales engagement, did we do the right demos, did it resonate, did we do the value consulting, both in terms of sales process and consistency, but also in terms of how well do we listen and how well are we starting to understand and mirror back what the customer is trying to do. So that feedback is also very instrumental. And the fourth element is just like what I started at the beginning, we shifted the conversation to outcomes. That is now what you're seeing at the event here, that every customer that stands up is actually talking about their outcomes. It is not about the feature, it's not about when it got there. It is what were they trying to solve and did they do it and what's the strategy.
So what are your challenges for the year ahead?
I think there are a couple of things. We have an opportunity now with this designation of being a leader, pioneer in quote to cash, you create the category. We're a leader in every single buying category that we are playing in. So clearly we've put ourselves in a good position to leverage that. But that comes with a responsibility that not only that, now there's an expectation set with the customers that we should bring thought leadership also. So we're not just taking orders, we're also putting our best efforts on the table right up front. And the customers do see us as a trusted advisor versus a vendor. So that, of course, takes time. And you also mentioned that getting that, how do you up-level that content, both people-wise as well as execution-wise. So that, of course, we're doing very well, but there's so much more room to improve in how we are engaging, how we are scaling, and how we are repeating the success that we are having in several of these verticals. Lots of hard work ahead, but we have a solid base to work off.
What about the competitive landscape out there?
Increasingly, what we are seeing is competitors are really point solutions. No one really has quote to cash. A lot of it is essentially very evident depositioning / differentiation. If it's just CLM deal, yes, we are the most, you know, so won't bother you with the details. But from a competitive standpoint, what our team is learning to do better and better is solution selling. That we leverage the footprint for our customer, we win 90% of the time. When we are trying to dig a hole with feature level selling, then it's up for grabs and it's a beauty contest and who knows who wins. So the repeatability of success is coming with us actually taking our full footprint and mapping that to the customer roadmap. So on a point solution basis, not an issue. What we are starting to see is that contract management has become the linchpin for modern business models. Because to run subscriptions, to do self-service, to do all of those things, you need to have all of the data available to you in a browser or on a phone. We're uniquely positioned for that.
At the moment, you're aimed very clearly at the large enterprise space. Do you see a possibility in the past for you to go slightly down market into the mid-market?
Absolutely. And what you're seeing there is more a dominant presence on the large enterprise, and we're very proud of that. The mid-tier is absolutely, and we have a bunch of customers. In fact, I think a third of our customer profile is exactly the mid-size, high-growth companies. So the characteristics are this, where we are a good fit for our customer. If you have enough product complexity or pricing complexity, or 70% of your revenue comes from existing customers, or you need to sell through multiple channels, there's probably a good need for Aptus. Because we can solve it very quickly, 3-4 month project, even less sometimes, and we have now a stable of partners that can do that. Mid-size is absolutely right there. We are absolutely selective in not going after the really small customers where you really may not need something like us. Maybe a spreadsheet is enough. So in those cases where the differentiation of our IP is not there, then that's okay. So it's being more selective in actually the pursuits where we are investing, because then we go after it full bore.
What's the one thing you're hoping for to happen in 2017?
I think the business tone, the macro tone needs to be stable across the world. We have some very large organizations now, and also there's a lot of instability right now. So I think the one thing I'm hoping for is the tone of the business across all these geographies and verticals stays positive. I think we are in a right place at the right time with our quote-to-cash solution.
Thank you very much, Kamal.
Thank you so much.